From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says everything that goes bump in a night. I'm your host, the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, not cape-wearing...
I guess I could now again.
Take a little break. It's still a warm back here. Update from last week, folks. We finally have air conditioning in the studio.
Yeah, you know what? Better than late than never.
Thank you, Jim
Dietlow.
Yeah, thank you, Jim, for making us not die back here.
Yeah.
And thank you, Chuck,
sometimes.
And thank you, Chuck, for taking a call before the show, as always.
Chuck's always there to take a call.
All right.
He gets paid in his own morning show. So that's
Companic's here, the heartthrob of Bob After Dark. Hello, Companic.
How's it going out there, everybody?
How was your weekend?
Weekend was good, Bob. I mean, you know, Summerween in full effect, right?
Yeah.
But I don't want to mess. People get very upset last week about the whole thing.
No.
We got a lot of letters.
We got some calls last week. You know what? There are supporters on the flip side of that coin of the Summerween. So we got to make sure that we keep the people happy that are also supporting Summerween.
Got to keep them all happy.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
But we do it.
We do it. They said it. Couldn't be done. They said it really shouldn't be done, but we do it.
But we do it anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Count Panic, if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are weekly a show where we talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories. And of course, Count Panic's favorite one scoop or two scoop on the ice cream in the summertime.
Two scoops in the summertime.
What's the two scoop flavors?
Ah, man. Relatively simple, man. I like the you know, chocolate ice cream, but, you know, sometimes, you know, with the Mackinac Island fudge, you know, the banana swirl.
What kind of fancy one was that?
The goofy ones.
That's fancy.
The Superman one, right? The Superman ice cream is pretty good sometimes.
Like that,
you know? How about you?
I'm a cookies and cream guy.
Okay. That's pretty standard.
Cookies and cream is my favorite ice cream, I think.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep. All right. So, Count, normally we have formalities on the show.
Formalities.
We go through things back and forth, and sometimes we have a guest, sometimes we don't. But we have a very cool guest this week. And the reason I say we have a very cool guest this week is because if you've been listening to Bob After Dark at all over the past 7-8 years that we've been around, especially pre-podcast days, people may know that we do our weird spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for the weird and unusual news. Now, the running gag here in the studio is that if it wasn't for this individual at all, that segment probably wouldn't exist, because 75% of my research has come from this guy.
But you know what? That's you.
And we've always,
I've
always cracked jokes that if I ever got him on the show, or if he was aware of the show, this guy's probably ready to beat me up because I'm writing his coattails.
You had to name drop him at least 1,000 times in the past.
Every episode, whenever we cover a story from this particular individual,
you owe him money.
I feel like I owe him something.
He's gonna shake you down in the parking lot here.
Dangle me over a balcony.
Get those coins out.
All right, count. I'm going to give you the pleasure of introducing our guest this week.
Yeah, of course. You know, coast to coast AM. I mean, boy, WJLB, we sit here and midnight, you know, it's been kicked in for many years. And yeah. I guess we'll get into the whole history of the show. But from that, we got a welcome to the program, to Bob After Dark, the man you name drop every single episode, Mr. Tim Banal is on.
Oh, hey there, Tim.
Hey. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Yeah. This is... This is so surreal because, like I said, we divide the show up into two parts normally when we don't have a guest. And I feel like I have to go out of my way not to use your articles sometimes, or if my fans send in an article, I just look and I'm like, oh, it's Coast to Coast, man. Tim's going to fight me one day.
No, man, it's great. I didn't know you guys were doing this. So you reached out to me like at the beginning of the summer to sort of touch base and mention that you've been using this stuff, and I appreciate it. You're not the first show, actually. This is now the second show that I know that does news and uses stuff that I write for Coast to Coast. It's great. It's second. Nice to know that, you know, I'm having some kind of influence sort of on the paranormal sphere out there, you know, beyond just writing the articles, that the other shows and other personalities are picking up on these stories and spreading them to their audience, too. It's pretty cool.
You're not the first one, Bob.
I'm not. You know what? Did you fight the first group?
No. They were cool.
That not as cool as us, though, Colin. Look at
not
that.
As cool as us. No.
Joke, of course. So, Tim, tell us a little bit about yourself and what your role is at Coast to Coast AM, and what is, and for like the 1% of people that don't know, what is Coast to Coast AM?
Oh, boy. Coast to Coast AM used to be the Art Bell Show in the 90s. Art Bell is pretty famous, so most people in the paranormal community should know who Art Bell was. But he was a radio personality who broadcast on the overnight and covered all kinds of weird, strange, and unusual stuff. So sort of like right around peak X-Files kind of time. And it became like a bona fide sensation, and on hundreds of radio stations, still on hundreds of radio stations. And eventually it transformed into Coast to Coast AM. Art Bell largely retired in 2003, and George Norrie took over hosting the show. He's been hosting it ever since, so the last, 23 years now. And they brought me in late 2015. I had been sort of filling in for the webmasters when they were on vacation. And then since the show website was only updated like at night and in the morning when the show was over, we were like, let's do something. Let's take advantage of this dormant website that's just sitting there all day. So they brought me in as the news editor, essentially, to write articles every day for the Coast to Coast website, or 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. So that's my role. I'm the senior news editor now after all these years, just pumping out about a dozen articles every week. I think I'm over 6,000 total now after all these years. And yeah, that's my gig pretty much. I like to... There's a Tom Hanks movie, like a Western, that came out like a few years ago called News of the World. And he was in Texas, and essentially his job was to collect news stories, news of the world, you know, from different newspapers and stuff. And he would go town to town and do like a little performance where he would tell these stories to the people, who the farmers and the people in... This is like right after the Civil War, right? So late 1800s, folks living in Texas. And that's kind of what I do, you know? There's folks out there, they're digging ditches, they're working at the mall, you know? They're nurses or cops or whatever, and they don't have time to look for Bigfoot stories and stuff like that, but God bless it, I am, and I'm incredibly fortunate that's my gig, that's my job, to look for the weird news of the world and then turn around and share it with everybody else and say, hey, look what I found.
Now, when you first started doing Coast to Coast news editing back in the day, were you already kind of in the paranormal sphere as a... were you already in the paranormal sphere, or did you come from a journalistic background? Where did that come from?
I studied TV, radio, and film at Syracuse, so I had sort of a communications background. And then I graduated in 2001, like right before 9/11. It's not particularly, you know, relevant necessarily to the story, but my late father, God rest his soul, he sat me down when I got home from college, and he handed me the want ads, and he handed me the balance of what I still owed for Syracuse and was like, all right, well, here you go. You got to pay this off. So I became an overnight janitor, actually, at my old high school while I was kind of kicking around trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And then somebody I knew was like, oh, you should check out Coast to Coast. It's on the overnight. And I'm like, what's that? And then they told me, you know, what it was. And so I got hooked up to that in like right when George Norrie took over, so around 2003. And it's a crazy turn of events. I never, you know, as an overnight janitor 23 years ago, I certainly never thought that I'd end up being the news editor for the show, but that's pretty much what happened. And as I was listening to the show on the overnights, I was like, boy, I'd really like to talk to some of these people who were on the show, but I can't call in, like, and be on hold in the middle of the night and da-da-da-da. And I know you're a big wrestling fan, Bob. I am as well. And this is, again, like 2003 or 4 now. And so I was a subscriber to PW Torch, which is Wade Keller's operation, which is like the number 2 to Dave Meltzer, for the real hardcore wrestling fans who are listening who know this stuff. And Wade's website had like daily audio updates, right? And you could download them and put them on your whatever the precursor to the iPhone was now. I forget what it was. But it was like, you would just download the MP3, right? So I was like, well, why don't I interview these people and record the conversations and then put them out on the internet like a radio show? And so I did. And the show was called Been All of America Audio, because I have a website, Been All of America. So it was like before the word podcast had even entered the vernacular. This was 2000, and well, we celebrated 20 years last year, so 2005. So yeah, I'd been around. I'd put in a decade in the business of the paranormal before I even started writing for Coast to Coast. So I've been doing this now for, like, all told, I've been in you know, as a paranormalist for 21, 22 years now. So yeah, it's been a journey.
So let's talk a little bit about the Been All of America. Where did you come up with that concept from, other than, were you just inspired by Coast to Coast and other things at the time and you wanted your own kind of your own show? Or did you go into it thinking that was going to be, yeah, tell us a little bit about it.
I mean, that's kind of it. Like I said, I was like, oh, I really would like to talk to these folks. And then it was a whole different world back then. Like I said, there weren't podcasts. I think it was like, there was probably like less than 15 shows when I started out. And some of them were just like specialist shows, like Bigfoot or Ghost. My show covered everything. So it was like, I was just like, I just want to talk to these folks. And luckily, since there were no other real shows, a lot of huge, 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 huge names at the time were more than happy to come on the show. So, like, the first year of doing the show, we had the first year, but we had Stan Friedman, Lauren Coleman, Nick Redfern, Jim Mars. I mean, these were all, like, super, 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 super huge names. And, like, even in the early years, it was like Brad Steiger, Jacques Vallée, David Icke, just big name celebrities, if you will, in the paranormal, stars, like the people that, you know, headlined the events. And they were all, you know, more than happy to come on the show. John Lear, it was crazy. It was really, like, I look back on that and I'm like, wow, you really interviewed a lot of really huge legendary folks when we first started out. So it was pretty awesome. And that's how it all kind of started, and it's just been snowballing downhill since then.
What was your favorite interview you've ever done back on the over your career with Been All of America?
Oh boy. I mean, I'm still doing interviews, dude. I just did one like 2 hours ago. So it's hard to say. Well, the one that's like really the most famous show we ever did is guest Adam Davies, cryptozoologist. He had been on the show many times before this. So he wasn't a crackpot or anything. You know, he had like a government job or something in England, and like used his vacation time and his money to go to like Sumatra and stuff to look for the Orang Pendek. And every year he would come on and talk about these different adventures that he went on. And then one year he was like, I came to America. And the other guy who was with him when this happened was on the show, too. I can't. It's been a long day, folks. I can't recall his name off. So John something. And so the story was, and he told the story like in riveting detail on the show. But essentially, they went out to like the middle of the woods in Pacific Northwest where this guy claimed was a Bigfoot hotspot. And the two of them saw, for lack of a better term, a portal. Like a portal opened up, like ahead of them in the woods, and these little creatures came out that were kind of like Ewoks, and they would charge at them, and they flicked on their flashlights, and it would cause these creatures to like recede back into the portal. It was bizarre. I mean, it's been written, the story's been like cited in books and stuff, just how strange it was, and you know, they only really told the story on my show. They were like, because Adam knew me so well, and I have no reason to believe why he would make that up, because he never really, you know, he could have really ridden that thing quite a ways, and he seemed more like traumatized by it. He really didn't want, I had him on like a few years back, and I'm like, let's talk about the famous story, and he was like, I almost don't want to anymore, it's just too weird, just too troubling to look back on that experience. So that's definitely the most famous show we did. I don't even recall how long ago that was. And then the one we get cited a lot too is a fun one that, because I always try to like interview, you know, people who have really weird ideas and beyond like the normal paranormal stuff. You know, and I'm really fascinated by like different, like conspiracy, not like QAnon type conspiracy theories, but like wackier conspiracy theories, like flat Earth. I've had a couple of flat Earth guests on. I've actually hung out with flat earthers down in Dallas one year. It was quite a weekend. I had a lady who was pushing a Michael Jackson death hoax, which I thought was a lot of fun, and a guy who's essentially like the preeminent like Elvis death hoax guy. So that was really fun to like explore that. But like the weirdest one, just so strange, is people still mention it, was the meat-eating horses. His theory was that horses eat meat. That's as simple as it gets. And it was like he had all this evidence and case studies and newspaper accounts of horses eating meat. And it was so absurd. I really was like, well, you know, I told him on the show, I'm like, I have no emotional investment in whether or not horses eat meat. So if you know, your evidence is pretty compelling, dude. So yeah, maybe horses do eat meat. I don't know. But yeah, I think I got like 500 shows. It's like, there's a whole bunch of like, you know, back before the whole Amish thing became big, we did a Rumspringa episode talking about that. And the next thing I know, like Amish Rumspringa like blew up in pop culture and stuff. But it was, yeah. So I try to find like the real, if I can, like the really weird sort of Nietzsche stuff that you know, really interests me.
Sure. That's got to be the most interesting story that we've never covered, is horse eating meat.
Now we'll take another one of Tim's things. We'll do an episode based on the horse.
Next week on Bob After Dark, horses, do they eat meat?
Yeah. I'm telling you, Cullen O'Reilly is his name. I haven't heard from him in a long time, but yeah. Really interesting character. Yeah.
So I got to ask you, ever interview anybody that thinks birds not real? Birds are not real?
No, I've never done a birds not real episode. No. I think that's the only one I haven't really. Yeah, I haven't. It's hard to keep up some of the newer stuff that comes out, you know. Like I'd like to do one on the Fresno Nightcrawlers, but there's not much to it to really get into. But yeah, no, I've not done birds. Birds aren't real. No, the closest was the flat Earth folks. So far. And a couple of moon hoax folks too.
Sure. The argument about the birds was that there's no baby pigeons, that they're all full-size pigeons. Nobody's ever seen a baby pigeon. So I think that kind of spawned the movement, Bob.
How do you know this?
Have you ever seen a baby pigeon?
not the argument, but I'm just saying, like, how did you know that of all people?
I may be a part of the... I can't get too much into it right now, but...
He can't. He's part of the conspiracy.
I might be. By the way, Heather and Vixis in the YouTube chats here, if you want to call in, I know we got a phone caller. We'll get you right now, but Vixis and Heather saying, Tim, love your stories from Vixis there, and...
thank you.
Vixis also says, so starstruck.
This is a starstruck episode.
Yeah. Stop.
And Heather's being Heather's a fan as well. But let's get to the. You want to go to the phone lines there, Bob?
Yeah, we'll take a phone caller real quick, folks. We've been having some phone call issues.
Oh,
where
yes.
Our guest hasn't been able to hear. So if I have to relay the questions, guys, just be aware.
That's a great point, Bob. I forgot about that fact.
Okay. You think you fixed it?
No, I don't think we might have fixed it. We'll try it here.
Okay, no problem. So caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hey there, Bob. Can Tim hear me or no?
Tim, can you hear our caller or no?
I cannot hear the caller,
okay,
so you'll
no
have
problem.
To relay.
I will definitely. Tough. That's put in the notes for next week. We got to figure
it out. We don't have enough people on Zoom, I guess, to qualify the caller as hearing the people on Zoom.
Listen, it's how.
The morning show.
It is 2026. I'm not going to. Tim's not going to come all the way out here to come sit and.
No, I know. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I got to talk to the morning show people.
All right. So what's crack-a-lacking, John? What's on your mind?
Anyway, Bob, you know what? I'm going to have to come down there during the day and look at that equipment there. I mean, this is, you know, so. But anyway, yeah, you know what? I just Googled about horses and meat. They do not eat meat. Their digestive system's not meant to handle meat. They're just plant-eating animals. So I thought I'd throw that in. But I think at the beginning, because I know you got to relay this question, you asked him, obviously he was a journalist because that's what he studied at Syracuse. And then does he have anything to do with experiencing paranormal activities himself?
Oh, we'll get to that. That's going to be a whole segment of the show.
Okay, so anyway, how...
Bob, what did that guy say? He was talking for a long time.
It's our weekly call-in, John. He was he wanted to let us know that he Googled it and horses don't eat meat, apparently.
Google said.
Well, that's the conspiracy theory, dude. That's the whole. That's how the guy ended up on the show because he's going against the status quo with his theory.
We gotta find out if they're. We gotta study.
Well, anyway, how did Tim? How did he find these certain all these people he interviewed? Now they all have something to do with the paranormal activity. Am I right?
Yeah,
majority of his.
Mm-hmm. He does
the majority of the people he interviews.
Yeah, the paranormal and the strange and unusual is who he interviews. Yeah.
Okay, so how then? I guess my question would be, how did he? And I think you might even ask this: how did he become involved in the paranormal? World. Did he ever have any involvement, any experiences where, you know, he wanted to continue? And, you know, interviewing other people that had experiences as well.
Sure. I'll ask that question for you, John.
All right. Have a good one. I'll be listening.
Thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate you. All right.
Thank you, John. Sorry I couldn't hear you.
That's how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
There you go.
So, Tim, John wanted to know about your background in the paranormal, which we'll get to because that's a very important question. So the part two of his question was, how do you find... And which is another question I was going to ask, so I might as well just ask it now, is what is your practice on finding these people and these stories of who for you to interview in your own private life? And how do you find the stories for Coast to Coast AM?
Well, really, for the guests for Banal of America, it's just anyone who has something interesting to say, you know, who had like the meat eating horses guy or someone who has a different slant on things. Or lately, I used to do a lot of international shows when I was starting out in the early years, but now it's kind of like a little more sort of regional folks. So it's like somebody from Adirondacks to talk about Bigfoot up in the Adirondacks. And we just did Strange Maine and, you know, we've done Weird Ohio, and I'd like to, you know, kind of someday sit down and ping off like all the states and do sort of like a run of shows where we get every different state, but that, you know, that takes time and effort and work, and I only have so many hours in the day. So, but yeah, that's kind of where I find them. Interesting people, or people who are doing interesting things, or, you know, I like people that are kind of just starting out a little bit too. I like to kind of give them a little rub and get them on the show and talk to them and find out how they got mixed up in all this. And, you know, where they see themselves going in the next few years kind of thing. So that's where I find the guests. Now, as far as the stories go, that's a whole complicated process of I have a huge list of places that I look to start the day. And then I don't want to give away too many trade secrets of it's just my trade, really. But it's, you know, but then I sort of work the Google as best I can to try and come up with like the really far flung stuff from like all over the world, pretty much, you know, and just kind of doing a lot of Google searching and searching in the Google News and searching in different ways through Google to find different stories and sort of just keep hitting all the keywords over and over and over again, like throughout the day. Like you wouldn't believe it. It's, you know, like get up in the morning, run through the list of probably like two dozen keywords that might ping something. And then as the day goes on, I'll write a story, take a break, come back later and be like, all right, let's run it. Let's run it again and go through all of the same sites again, see if anything broke during the day, search through Reddit a lot. Just search. That's really, you know, and then the stories find me, you know, then they pop out and it's like, whoa, that's pretty wild. All right, there you go. That's your story right there. But yeah, just a lot of searching and then, you know, a lot of reading, because you got to read the story to be like, okay, what's the story here? What's the hook? What am I... You know, what story am I going to tell these folks who are reading the Coast to Coast site? How can I take this story from a small newspaper in the Philippines, and how can I tell that story to the readers at Coast to Coast, pretty much? How can I kind of reinvent this tale, you know, from my perspective, sort of give it the banal Coast to Coast spin and try and make it as entertaining as I can for people who are reading.
Count, you got any questions before we dive into the paranormal aspect?
Well, I don't have a. I'll let you get into the paranormal aspect, but can I take a little break in the show here? Because Tim fancies himself as a wrestling guy as well, I know.
Okay.
We are too. All right, we'll get to the paranormal, okay? I promise, everybody.
No, that's fine. What do you
let's
got?
Let's indulge me. It's the age-old question. Favorite wrestler of all time?
You got Count Panic excited.
Favorite wrestler of all time.
Favorite wrestler.
All time.
Oh, man. Well, I've been a fan since 89.
Okay.
So I have been a fan, yeah, since, yeah, so you know, I don't even know what the math is on that, but like probably almost like 40 years yeah. now. Yeah, 37 years. So I've seen them all, and then I'm like a kind of a, I'm like obsessive about it, so I'm a little bit like of a wrestling historian, so... you know, I've really kind of studied the history of wrestling and everything like that. I just love it. I don't know. Favorites, there's a whole bunch. But, like, obviously I love Ric Flair, all of his personal strangeness aside. like, Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes, sort of the old school contemporary era. I really loved Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson, however, you know, yeah, Bryan, that's his name in AEW. Yeah.
That was,
For some reason I get them always mixed up, but, yeah, Bryan Danielson's probably, you know, he's sort of like been my favorite for like the last like five or six or whatever years up until he retired recently. You know, contemporary guys, I love Eddie Kingston. I'm a huge Tony Storm fan. Yeah, I watched all through the Attitude Era. I loved The Undertaker when he was coming up. Mick Foley, Cactus Jack. That would probably be my main favorites that I've liked over the years. I mean, I'm sure you kind of know how it is. It's like they come and go, and that's they disappear, true. And then a new guy comes up, and it's like, oh, I really like this guy, and I'm a huge AEW fan. I don't watch WWE anymore. I grew up on it, but I don't watch it anymore, and I only watched AEW. So I have like all kinds of favorites from just watching every week. It's like you have your half dozen that you kind of tune in to see, you know, every week. So yeah, it's I'm a pretty big fan in general of wrestling.
Thank you for that answer. Bob, we've been compared to Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes before.
No, we have not.
In terms of podcasting.
As far as podcasting, I think
Mention also Terry Funk.
Terry
Funk's probably I think he's in content. He's in the conversation for GOAT, I think, Terry Funk.
Fun.
Especially over the years, you look back on his career, it's really a remarkable sort of series of changing styles over the years from the old NWA all the way up to the Attitude Era, Monday Night Wars. He was in the mix for all that stuff. So really tremendous.
Fun fact about Terry Funk, as we broadcast here in Hammond, Indiana, Terry Funk was born here in Hammond, Indiana. Not Texas, as some believe. He moved to Texas
Texas after.
Right after. But well, he was born mere blocks away from here. So there's a nice tie into the story there, Bob.
I'm glad, Count, that you got to talk about wrestling.
Another wrestling question. No, go ahead, Bob.
I want to point out that you have probably the world's leading expert in paranormal news.
I know. I just want to get you that out of the way.
And the one question you wanted to ask was about professional wrestling.
He opened it up earlier. So.
Believe it or not, there's a weird crossover between professional wrestling fandom and paranormal fandom. And it's like I've talked wrestling on many podcasts over the years of paranormal podcasts of people who are huge wrestling fans. So it's a crazy crossover between paranormal fans and wrestling fans. I don't know what it is, but it exists.
We're gonna have to do a wrestling podcast next time there, Bob.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do the wrestling show with me, you and Steve, through the middle rope.
Well, there we go. Tim will come back when that starts up.
Absolutely, do so, please. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your paranormal background, Tim. You said you were, you know, janitoring late night at a high school, and you were listening to Coast while you were kind of working and whatnot. And so is that what sparked your interest in the paranormal? Was there an interest in the paranormal prior to listening to Coast?
Oh, prior. When I was a kid, I was really into it. You know, unsolved mysteries and all that stuff. And I was super into it as a kid. Then I got into high school and college and kind of dipped out of it. And, you know, I mean, I was like super into it as a kid. I didn't like study it. You know what I mean? So like when I got out of college and got into Coast to Coast, that's when I like actually started reading like grown up books about it and stuff like that. And not just watching Unsolved Mysteries. So, yeah, it was sort of a lifelong fan who got really into it again in 2003. You know, it was all very fresh then for me. And I was like, oh, well, I haven't, you know, what's the story with all these things I saw as a kid? You know, are they any closer to solving these mysteries and all that? And kind of devoured like everything I could get my hands on all the different topics. You know, a lot of people get involved I call it a business, but in the field, in the paranormal, and then they kind of gravitate toward one thing or the other. They're like a UFO guy, or they're into the cryptozoology stuff, or they do ghost hunting, you know, or they're into conspiracies, or they get super niche and they're into like specific mysteries like Amelia Earhart or D.B. Cooper or something. I want to know it all. I want to know about everything. And so over the years, the show has covered, you know, we haven't done Birds Aren't Real, but we've covered just about every topic you can think of, you know, Bermuda Triangle, spontaneous human combustion, the whole nine yards. And it's been a huge, you know, benefit to me doing the Coast to Coast stuff, because it's like I have to know what's going on in all the different fields all the time. It's like that Seinfeld bit about the veterinarian. You know, it's like I gotta be able to diagnose a chicken, a pig, a dog, a cat, a hamster, a rabbit. I gotta know. I gotta be able to fix them all, and that's kind of my deal with the paranormal. It's like tomorrow morning, I couldn't tell you, but I might get up. There might be a Amelia Earhart story. You know, there could be something about Dyatlov Pass. Could be a cattle mutilation. Might be a crop circle. I need to be able to cover it. I need to know what the story is. I need to understand the background of all these things, which I do. So, you know, I've got 20 years under my belt studying all these things. So it's exciting. It's interesting. It's weird. It's fun. It's, you know, it's odd. It's really odd. Sometimes I'm like, well, if I had just become a UFO guy, I'd probably be, you know, higher up in the world of weirdness or something. But it's like, nah, I'm an observer of all of this. I want to take it all in. I want to look over the whole buffet and kind of sample everything that's available there. Because the stuff, things, all of this weird stuff really interests me.
What is your, everybody has to have a favorite, Tim. What's your favorite topic to research, or what's, if you come across it in your studies of news, what tickles your fancy the most?
Well, I mean, the main thing is, I always kind of had my foot in two camps, UFOs and Bigfoot.
Sure.
But far more in recent years with the explosion in UFO silliness, let's call it. I'm not a big fan of sort of the post 2017 UAP world that we live in, and I find it kind of boring. So I'm more leaning into the Bigfoot world. But even as a kid, like, I remember being like in third grade, and of course my mom made the thing, because isn't that how it always is, like when you're in third grade? But like I did like a little book report or whatever on Bigfoot, and she made like a life-size Bigfoot to sort of convey how big it was in comparison to little third grade me. So that, I mean, that's how far back I remember being interested in that stuff. And I do find Bigfoot to be more, I don't know, almost like romantic in a way. Like, it's sure. it's like this folklore-ish thing. It's like it's Americana. It's a very, I don't know. This is something fun about it, and something like, I like to say on the show, like, Bigfoot's like a folk hero now. It wasn't like that when I was growing up, but it certainly is now, that people love Bigfoot. They celebrate Bigfoot like all over the country. It's like, it's just as American as it can be, Bigfoot. And I don't get that kind of vibe from UFOs. UFOs is like kind of scary, and oh, are we alone, and all this like profound questions about humanity and all that. And it's like, just give me Bigfoot.
Sure. What's a case in recent memory with the UFOs that really sparked your interest? Because Count and I, we do the show and we talk about something different every week. We don't have a specific topic that we follow other than it being paranormal or unusual. But it seems to be we talk about aliens more than anything these days. What do you? What's a story that sticks out to you that might be causing some of the hype even before some of the what's the word I'm looking for, Count? The new movie that just came out.
Disclosure.
Oh, yeah, Disclosure Day.
Yeah. So what do you think was the hype building up to Disclosure Day and all this other jazz? What do you think sparked it?
I mean, I don't know. I think that something clearly happened around mid-2017 where they were like, okay, this is going to be a thing now. And then that New York Times article came out, and you can follow like the path pretty much from there. And it's like it's very interesting. I was talking about this with Greg Bishop, who's going to be on the show tomorrow, actually, tomorrow when the new episode of Banal America drops. And it's like, everybody, like I said, I came up sort of in the UFO world. Like, I knew all those people better than I did most of the people in the other fields besides the Bigfoot field. And it's like, they're all gone. Most of them were old timers who passed away. And even there's a whole new audience of people who are interested in this that weren't in the trenches with us like 20 years ago. It's crazy. It's like, where do you all come from? This is wild. And there's all these new personalities. It's a whole, I don't know, man, something happened. It changed. That's why I call it UAPs. Like, I know people don't like that, but it's like, no, this is not like UFOs. It's a whole different world. It's all new personalities, all new skeptics, all new fans. It's a whole different little bubble of its own that just kind of burst onto the scene in 2017. I mean, I don't know. I think the government releasing these videos, even though they're not particularly compelling, it's like they never did that stuff up until now. So, I mean, that's what's getting people kind of excited, I suppose. It's like, oh, well, these are from the government. These are like legit videos, whatever they are, who knows, you know. But it's like, I think getting that sort of like seal of approval, as sort of kind of flimsy as it is, from the government, gave it this like veneer of respectability that people all of a sudden were like, oh, okay, this is cool now. You know, I also liken it a lot to like comic books and stuff like that, and geek culture and everything. In a way, it's like the UFOs and the paranormal too. A rising tide lifts all ships, but it's like, I mean, like, I don't know how old you guys are, but like, comic books were not they were not cool when I was growing up, and it wasn't until they started, I think really like the X-Men movie with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, that very first, like, that kind of started. It seemed like that got the ball rolling, and now it's like superhero movies are huge. They're kind of on the down low, or the down wind down now, but I liken it to that kind of like, this fringy stuff is getting more popular, and more acceptable. Even pro wrestling's like that. I mean, WWE's on ESPN now. It's like this sort of fringe stuff is getting more accepted in the mainstream. Maybe as people from my generation, I'm like almost 50. It's like, maybe as folks like my age are kind of coming along who grew up on this stuff, and it's like, no, I like wrestling. I'm not a big comic book guy, but it's like, I like paranormal. So it's like, the people get older, and now we're the adults, and we're like, yeah, okay, well, it's going to be cool now. So get over it.
Do you actually get out in the field and do research as well? So paranormal investigations, UFO hunting, all of that kind of jazz? Or do you just like to get your research in and call it a day?
Oh, I do occasional stuff. I'm not like in a group or anything. I've thought about forming a group here, but there's a lot of... I'm in Boston, which isn't really necessarily relevant to the story per se, but it's just for people who are wondering. But yeah, I thought about, so I'm in the suburbs, thought about starting like a little group here, but it's like, you're always dealing with strange personalities, especially in this topic, so maybe not. But I've done like two or three ghost hunts. And then last year I went down to Georgia and spent a weekend in the woods on a Bigfoot hunt with Joshua Cutchin the Grangers. I forget the husband's name. Sheila Granger and her husband now. Forgive me, folks. But yeah, they do like these camping expeditions. And so we went out into the woods and spent a couple of days in the Georgia woods looking for Scott and Sheila Granger. Went down to the Georgia woods kind of looking around for Bigfoot stuff and seeing if we could find Bigfoot. So yeah, I've done a couple of those. I've never done like a UFO watch or anything like that. You know, I'd probably do another Bigfoot expedition if I could. You know, it was a lot of fun. But yeah, so occasionally, but certainly not like, I'm not like a weekend warrior or anything like that when it comes to this stuff.
Nothing wrong with that. Sometimes you find your niche and you just kind of stick with it. I don't get out in the field as much as I like to, but I'm here. I do in the studio every week, and we're in a haunted radio studio, yeah. So that's kind of cool.
Why do you need to go in the field? Go, just stay here.
Oh, yeah, it's air conditioned.
Finally,
exactly. Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah.
Tim, we're reaching kind of the end of the hour here, but we still got a little bit of time, so we're going to ask you a couple more questions here.
Ask as many as you like.
I appreciate that. What is, outside of Bigfoot and cryptozoology, what are some of your favorite topics to cover other than Bigfoot?
The flat earth, man. I'm not a flat earther, but I am a friend of the flat earthers. I find them to be a really interesting subculture. They're kind of dying out right now, but they'll be back.
They're all
I got really into it into studying the subculture for a long time, right before the pandemic, actually. I went down to Dallas, where they held a convention, and essentially embedded myself with the Flat Earthers, spent the whole weekend with them, hung out with them, hung out at the bar with them, kind of came to like a tacit agreement right from the start where it's like, look, I'm not going to try to talk you out of this. You know, don't try to talk me into it. I'm not a Flat Earther, but I want to know how you became a Flat Earther. So I had a lot of really interesting conversations with people about that. And since then sort of have followed the trials and tribulations of the Flat Earthers, because they always seem to be doing something silly. They have a real penchant for sort of showmanship in a bad way. Just doing goofy stuff, interrupting city council meetings and going on game shows and trying to hand out flyers that places they shouldn't be. And it's always just like, oh, come on, dude. I think during the pandemic, there was an Italian couple who were Flat Earthers who tried to leave the quarantine to go find the edge of the Flat Earth. It was like, what is going on here, man? I love it. So I'm a huge fan of that sort of whole genre of strangeness. I'm always it's part of the list of stuff I look up every day. I'm always looking to see what the Flat Earthers what kind of trouble they might be getting into. I love D.B. Cooper. I'm a huge D.B. Cooper buff. I really got into that in the last few years. I think that's a really interesting case and really complicated and odd sort of case. So, yeah. And I mean, Lake Monsters I'm a big fan of, too, you know. So, and, yeah, those are kind of some of the other side ones that I enjoy, you know, as a side meal, where I'm like, all right, well, I'm happy today because I got a Lake Monster. That's a good one, you know, or I got a good one for Flat Earth, or something happened with D.B. Cooper. Those are fun ones to do.
All right, we have another caller on the line.
Again, we'll have to relay the.
Tim, we'll relay it to you. So, caller, we're going to keep it short just so I can relay the question to Tim. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bob, this is me again. So if I could have a mulligan.
Oh, hey, John, welcome
Tim
back.
When Tim mentioned about Bigfoot, you know, we all jumped off our seats here. So, quick question. Did he ever have any encounters with Bigfoot? And what does he think in general of the whole Bigfoot phenomenon? And I'll let you go at that.
Okay, Sounds good. Thanks, John. That's a great question.
Let me hang up first.
Yeah, I'll hang up. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, Tim, our John called back because him and the missus are massive Bigfoot fans.
Big. Nice.
And he was curious where your take was on the... Have you ever experienced any Bigfoot-related phenomena? And what's your take on it, especially with new, and I'm going to use the term evidence really loosely. There's always seeming to be new evidence lately. You know, every 6 months we get a new photo these days. What's your take on it? And have you ever had a Bigfoot experience?
Okay, when we went on the Bigfoot hunt, there was this weird moment where like we heard a strange thump like right behind us around the campfire, and we don't know what that was, and it was seemed like it might have been something being thrown or some kind of like something, you know. It was the only thing that happened that weekend that was inexplicable, so I guess you could count that as sort of a possible Bigfoot experience. But I mean, I'm not by any stretch sort of attributing it to Bigfoot. It was just kind of like, that was weird. Okay. And it happened to happen on a Bigfoot hunt. So it's like, all right, that it's tangentially Bigfoot related, but I have no idea if it really was Bigfoot. You know, I want, in a sense, I think it to be just a flesh and blood creature. That would be like the easiest answer to all this and sort of the most palatable and like literally you could wrap your arms around it in a sense. But there's a part of me that's like, this has gone on so long. There's no evidence for this thing. There's no like definitive proof. That's what I meant to say. There's plenty of like weird evidence and strange hair things and footprints and scat and all that stuff, that could be connected to Bigfoot. So, but you know, this it, part of me's just like, I don't know. It's been decades, and no one's really kind of nailed this thing down. So I do certainly entertain the idea of a paranormal Bigfoot. Maybe it's like some kind of interdimensional thing. You know, maybe it's, you know, an interdimensional kind of can apply to all kinds of crazy things because we don't really even know what that means. But it's like, you know, maybe it can come in and out of our world somehow. You know, I don't know. But I certainly entertain the concept because that would explain why it's so elusive and some of the stranger reports you hear about them dematerializing and you know, someone sees half a Bigfoot and they can't see the other half and it moves across the road. It's like, all right, well, what was that? You know, maybe Bigfoot's like akin to like a ghost, not necessarily a ghost itself, but some kind of otherworldly thing that doesn't quite occupy our materialistic world entirely. So I'm open to it. I mean, there's a part of me that's just kind of like, yeah, this has gone on for so long. How come it hasn't broken open yet? And how come they haven't proven this thing yet? And it's like, well, maybe there's something we're missing here. There's something we haven't quite figured out about this thing that would explain everything, you know?
You know, I asked this question a couple months ago, to, I guess, but I want to ask it here to Tim. In this world of AI, whether it be Bigfoot, the paranormal, aliens, how messy it is to go through, like, pictures and videos, now evidence, with AI. I mean, that's just kind of causing trouble, I think, for the paranormal investigators out there.
That's a good question, Gaunt.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really a sea change for the whole genre, if you will. You know, from where I sit at Coast to Coast, it's like, yeah, I have to be a lot more discerning about what gets shared, you know, written about at the website. But I also, it hasn't changed necessarily what I do too much, because I always try to lay out the story in a way that I give the reader all the options of what it could be. It's funny because Coast to Coast is such a fantastic program and deals with such strange stuff, and people kind of turn their nose up at it like we're not a real news source, when I can tell you that we're probably, I take it more seriously than probably anyone could possibly imagine. I would never go out and go, oh, somebody filmed Bigfoot or whatever. It's like, somebody filmed something. Here's how it went down. Here are the possible options. And one of those options is now I include AI. So it's like, well, you gotta, you know, mention the possibility that it's AI. Although the weird thing with AI almost is it's like, it's so good that you can almost always spot spot it right away.
It's too good.
Because it's like, yeah, I mean, I'll be running like a Bigfoot video tomorrow, and it's not great. And it's like, if someone was, I mean, it's still really compelling, and it's like, wow, okay, that's, I haven't seen a good Bigfoot video in a while, but it's like, you can't look at it and go, that's 100% Bigfoot. It's like a figure moving in a field. And it's like, I think people can't help themselves. If they were going to use AI, you know, to hoax something, it would be too good to be true. I see a lot of stuff that's like too good to be true.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, people post them like on TikTok and stuff, and they're pretty easy to kind of spot. What's too good to be true, and what is just someone filmed something really weird. You know what I mean?
Because I mean, everybody online goes crazy, and then they'll share it, and like, well, this is totally fake in AI. Why are we sharing this so much? But it's just something annoying that's going on these days, Bob.
Oh, it's super annoying. Yeah. It's really, believe me, I'm not an AI fan by any stretch.
No, it's tough. Even when I don't distinctly use your work, Tim, when I'm searching for news articles or even research for the topic of the week, AI is so prominent in this day and age, and it really it could really mess with things. And then people send me like evidence and be like, well, what do you think of this? And I'm watching it and I'm like, this is clearly AI, folks. I'm sorry you fell for it.
Too perfect.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Tim, I got a couple more questions for you. My first one was, have you had a chance to screen the, I don't remember the name of it. Do you, the big Sundance film this year that was calling the Patterson Ghibli film fake?
Oh.
Did you get a chance? Are you familiar with that
movie? I'm very familiar with it. I have not seen it. I'm still waiting to even hear when it'll be available to see. I'm hearing maybe October, but I don't know much more about it than that. I know as much as everybody else.
Okay, I didn't know if you had any deeper insight on it and what your opinion was on it.
I mean, people I've talked to who are kind of plugged in to the scene really say that it's really bad for the Patterson Gimlin film. It's they're like, it just does not look good at all, and you know, it's gonna upend the whole thing. So it's like, everybody I know, I'm like really good friends with Lauren Coleman. I don't know if you guys know Lauren, but he's like, you know, he's a titan. And I saw him like last weekend and we were talking about it, and it was, he hasn't seen the clip. So it's everybody and their brother who has an interest in Bigfoot wants to see the clip. I'm stunned it hasn't been leaked or popped up online somewhere yet. So it's, you know, and then we'll all have to kind of judge for ourselves, really, about whether we think that it was, I mean, they say rehearsal, but I've seen the theory that it was just the original. Like they tried it. They didn't like how it came out, so they tried it again, and then the second version was the one that became famous. You know, so it's really interesting. It's really interesting. It's stunning. I was absolutely stunned when I heard about this whole story, that what happened and how they found the film and all that, and I was like, oh my God, I want to see this movie. And they even had, like, they screened it at Sundance, and then they screened it down in, they were going to screen it in New Orleans, and I was, like, really close to flying down to New Orleans just to see this movie, because it's like, when am I ever going to get a chance to see this? How long is it going to take for them to release it? But then they canceled it, probably because they were afraid people were going to film the clip, the money shot of whatever, you know, whatever this is. So, I think it could be bad for Patterson Gimlin film. It could really kind of debunk the whole thing. But there's a whole other part of it where it's like, in this day and age, how many people really are going to even like know or hear about it? You know what I'm saying? It's like it'll come out. There'll be a lot of there were a lot of articles, but once it's more widely available, there'll be a lot of stories about it in the mainstream media. Obviously, cover it coast to coast. But then it'll be out of the news cycle, and people who didn't hear about it, which will be a lot of folks, they'll just never know the story behind it. It's kind of like the old surgeon's photo of the Loch Ness Monster. If you showed that to somebody, they'd be like, that's the Loch Ness Monster. They don't know that it was a fake picture. And I think the same thing will happen with the Patterson Gimlin film. I think forever it'll be sort of this thing that people believe it or they don't believe it, and there's tremendous evidence. If this movie is what they say it is, there'll be some serious evidence that it probably isn't on the level. But, I mean, it'll always be sort of up for debate, I think, with a lot of people. And as I said, a lot of people just won't even know about this movie that came out. That's just the nature of how this works. People who aren't into Bigfoot, I mean. You know, Bigfoot folks will know about it, but people who are just kind of don't know anything about it, they're just not really going to hear about the fact that this movie came out that seemingly debunked the Patterson Gimlin film. So it's, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but at the same time, it's new, interesting information. I mean, I have no emotional investment per se in the veracity of the Patterson Gimlin film. If Gimlin came out tomorrow, he's still alive. If he came out tomorrow and said it was all fake, I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, well done. Like, I'm amazed basically that you guys pulled this off. So, you know, it's to me, it was like, who, you know, at the start of the year, I mean, there were rumblings of this, I guess, like in, you know, Bigfoot circles that this movie was going to be coming out this year. But it's like no one, you know, if you'd asked me like on January 1st, if you told me that there was going to be a grand revelation surrounding the Patterson-Gimlin film, I would be like, that's crazy. That movie's like 50 years old. What could possibly come out about the Patterson-Gimlin film short of Gimlin saying something, which he hasn't, and that's it on that. So it's like, to me, it was like, what? What a crazy revelation. This is wild. So, I mean, you just take it all with a grain of salt.
Sure. Conte, you got any last questions for Mr. Banal while we have him?
You know what? I'm working on the wrestling podcast as we speak.
Getting Tim on there.
Wrestling podcast. I'm down, brother.
Yeah. Now, Tim, something we always do with our guests whenever we have them on is we always make the guests give some sort of quip, a piece of advice, a riddle, something. Huh. So do you have something for our audience this evening to kind of think about?
Oh, boy. A riddle?
It could be a riddle, a quip, a piece of advice. It could be as simple as don't play with matches.
I mean, I guess I would just say, and this is like, it sounds a little gatekeepery, and I don't mean it to be that way, but this is just how I came in, and it was like, I told you, I started with Coast to Coast just listening to the show, but I listened to the show for like 2 or 3 years before I started Banal of America. I would just say, learn as much as you can before you jump into things. You know, I mean, kudos to you guys. You've been broadcasting a long time, and that's awesome. I couldn't tell you how many shows I've been on that, like, I'm on episode 6, and the show shuts down at episode 8. And it's like, they don't want to do it anymore, but they have the fancy logo, they're on all the social media, they got everything going on. It's like, you know, focus on what you want to do and sort of really kind of dig into it and don't expect things to blow up overnight. And really, the other thing would be like, learn the history of this stuff. You know, as I said, I name dropped a lot of old timers, legends who aren't with us anymore. Stan Friedman was a dear friend of mine. You know, Lauren Coleman's a buddy of mine. Brad Steiger was amazing. And as we get older and new generation comes along, they don't necessarily know about these folks. So, you know, dig into their work because it's tremendous. And it's a lot of the stuff is these are the giants upon whose shoulders we stand. So, you know, dig into their stuff and learn more about sort of the history of all this stuff and how did it come about? You know, that's what happened with me with the Flat Earth. I was like, where did this even come from? Like, how long have people been talking about this? And I just started reading about it. Christine Garwood has an amazing book on the history of the Flat Earth Theory. It goes back to, like, the 1800s in England. And it was just amazing for me to learn about that stuff. So it was like, that's the kind of stuff I'm interested in. I think people should, you know, try to dig more into that. So, that's my... Those are my words of advice and quips and all that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Conte, you got any closing words for the audience?
Well, no, this has been a treat. I know Bob has been giddy the whole week.
I've been giddy all week. This has been such a treat.
And he owes you a lot of money. We'll have to get him a check.
Well, the check's in the mail.
Yeah, I'm going to send you guys an invoice once I get the AI to scrape through all the old episodes. I'll let you know.
All right, folks. Thanks for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to say goodnight to all of you, to Mom, just sweet dreams. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing in the afterlife. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all and keep listening to Coast AM. Folks, thank you so much. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Lemonade is changing insurance, starting with your claim handled before you can.